A headline in a local newspaper read, "A long road from farm to fork worsens outbreaks." And the article then followed with details how distance exacerbated a recent food contamination that killed some and sickened many across the land. This headline in the article led us to ask, can we shorten the distance between farm and fork?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 746th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Lisbon who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James on the board, our own Miss Idaho. Hello, Nikki.
You know, how's it going?
Folks, they say our food now travels an average of 1,200 miles from where it was grown to where it's consumed, from their farm to our fork, so to speak. That being the case, consider Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in that food. As if to lend credence to this law, an Associated Press headline this week proclaimed, "Long road from farm to fork worsens the outbreak." The following story, of course, detailed the how distance exacerbated the cantaloupe contamination that killed so many and sickened so many more across the nation of ours. But that's not the only contamination we've heard about recently, right? Last week, there was the recall of ground beef from 14 states. Then there were the recalls of eggs and peanut butter and spinach and turkey. And hey, what about that melamine-contaminated baby formula from China? Well, you get the picture. All of these major contaminations seem to have one thing in common, distance. The foods were produced in large industrial-scale facilities somewhere, then shipped through a series of middlemen to consumers in a distant market, who then became the victims. Given the extent of these contaminations, we really must ask, can we shorten the distance from farm to fork? And who better to ask than Andy and Dan, the movie men? Andy being Andrew Monboquette, co-producer of the movie Growing Cities. Andy, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Very good, and thank you for joining me on the Food Chain. Pleasure to have you aboard. What the heck is Growing Cities?
Well, my partner Dan Sussman here is with me as well.
Right. I'm going to introduce him in a second, but I was just going to get to you so I can tune people into your voices here.
Sure. Growing Cities is a labor of love. It's our documentary film project that follows Dan and I all around the country, visiting all kinds of urban farms, people being producers in the city, not just consumers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great project that we're super excited to talk to you about this morning.
Good. And how on earth did you, what is your background? How did you become involved in chasing these stories around the country like this?
Well, I guess the main reason I'm friends with the crazy man sitting next to me.
Okay.
We were talking about what we wanted to do when we were done with school, and I had always been passionate about trying to make movies. And, you know, what better thing to do than make a movie that can have some decent, positive social change?
Well, good. So, let's introduce your wacky friend, Dan Sussman. Dan, thank you for joining us on the Food Chain, and thank you for tracking me down and saying, hey, Olson, do this show.
Yeah, no problem. It's great to be on, and we're definitely really excited to be talking to you this morning.
So Andrew was always excited about making movies. Were you a movie man too, or were you a food guy?
I was more of the food guy. I had done a little bit of movie making in college, but really my passion came in. I was working on some urban farms, studied ecology and environmental studies in college, and really got into the sustainable good food movement. Yeah.
So. What is your background? Just out of curiosity. Do you have any relationship with agriculture in your past, in your childhood?
Not big scale agriculture. Mm-hmm. Both my parents were gardeners, as were Andrew's, and I grew up, you know, outdoors, and you know, growing squash and tomatoes and, you know, basically playing in the dirt with my parents, and that's kind of what laid the foundation for this this sort of stuff.
Fair enough. And so the two of your...
That we have some grandfather or grandparent that was a farmer, but neither of us really do. And I have some uncles, or I have an uncle and some cousins who farm corn and soy, but that, or corn and soy, but that's really the closest it comes.
Okay, so it's really a different world then, too, than what you're talking about as well. You know, they're involved in industrial agriculture somewhere in the Midwest, perhaps, and you're talking about growing food in the cities. And you've got a project. You're making a movie. How far along are you?
Yeah, so we took a 3-month road trip this summer, visiting over 60 urban farms in about 20 cities across the country. So
you know what? When I heard that story, I said to myself, it sounds like an excuse to have fun.
It was definitely one of those, too. But
maybe just a little bit.
An excuse to have fun with a social mission.
Uh-huh.
And so we went to all these different urban farms, talking to all these different amazing producers, everything from rooftop farmers to people who have goats, chickens, bees in their backyards. And now we're basically in the editing process, so going through all the footage, looking at it, saying, okay, well, what can we get? What's the best stuff? And then, so we're posting clips and all that sort of stuff on our website, mm-hmm. which is growingcitiesmovie.com.
So people can get a taste of the action by going to growingcitiesmovie.com. Let me ask you this, which is something I like to ask all my guests, is who pays the way? Are you getting a grant from Monsanto or something?
Yeah, and a bunch of other big corporations. No, we were very fortunate to get some postgraduate grants from Dan's school, and we've had a couple of private donors as well, but we are still very much actively fundraising, about to be launching a Kickstarter campaign in the winter here and a couple other efforts as well.
Good. And what does one do with, how does one go about marketing, just out of curiosity? How does one go about marketing your documentary? When you complete it, you have a movie or a documentary called Growing Cities. It tells a story of urban farmers throughout the United States. What do you do with it then?
Well, basically, if you're not Steven Spielberg, you have to be very persistent and send lots of email.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, so it's all about, building the community from the very beginning, and that's what we've been really trying to do, is this grassroots effort of saying, hey, join us on Facebook, join us through our newsletter, join us on our website, and follow our journey. So really building that audience and that group of people who really cares about these issues before you even come close to, coming out with it. Because you can't just say, all right, here's our movie,
say, hey, Olson, do this show. And you kept at it, and that's how it happened. Good for you. Good on you, as they say way down south. Well, let me ask you then about having had a little bit of experience in the craft of making documentaries through the years. How did you go about finding your subjects?
Mm-hmm.
So you collected, 30 farmers around the country, or urban farmers?
Even more. And it was basically for about 4 or 5 months, we just went internet, phones, email, just really trying to make this giant catalog, database of all these different urban farmers.
Looking through all kinds of old news stories, CNN, ABC, the whole mass media is going crazy over urban farming over the last couple of years. So
that's a real interesting observation. I wrote a book called Metro Farm. It came out over a decade ago now. And when that book came out, I was like a heretic of agriculture. People would shun me, literally. But it's not that way anymore. And like you said, there's been a tremendous amount of focus on urban agriculture, which I call metropolitan agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What's going on?
Yeah. So, that was definitely one of the big, impetuses for us to go out and look, because we're like, why? Why are all these people, doing this? And
why is the media now focusing on urban agriculture or local agriculture? What's going on?
Yeah, well, I think one is that there's a lot more people doing it in a lot of really creative ways. And, it's not something that's completely new, as if you've been writing this book and did all that. But
it's been something that's always happened.
Mm-hmm.
Industrial agriculture is really the exception to the rule.
Absolutely.
If you look at things in a historical context, and yet here we are, all of a sudden, this local agriculture is catching on like wildfire. And we're going to take a quick break right now. But when we come back, I'd like to ask the both of you, what happened to spur this renewed interest in feeding ourselves? Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're going to have a whole bunch of fun traveling the country with Andrew Monboquet and Dan Sussman, co-producers of the movie Growing Cities. The young men got out of college, jumped in their car. What kind of car do you drive?
It might have been my mom's minivan.
Okay. Jumped in the mom's minivan, and you had a camcorder or a video recorder, and away you went. 30 cities or 30 farms around the country, and we're going to learn all about what people are doing to grow their own food instead of relying on food that comes from thousands of miles away. Right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. I am Michael Olson. Today we're talking with a couple of young filmmakers. I guess they're not film anymore, but the documentary makers, Andrew Monboquet and Dan Sussman, co-producers of the movie Growing Cities. Question on the table as we speak right now is why? Why is there such an interest in local food that these young men would jump in their mother's minivan and race across the country collecting all of this footage and tape of these people who are growing food for in and near cities for people in cities? Why are we all of it? Because for so long, for the past half a century, you know, the watchword in agriculture was always get big and get out. And so we held up this model of industrial agriculture and we're very proud of it and are still very proud of it. But now there's this kind of refocusing on local agriculture. So these young men have been driving around the country, so let's ask them, why are we now so interested in local agriculture? Which one of you wants to take this first?
I think I'll take it first, Michael, and okay. Then Andrew maybe will add something in.
And you're Dan, right?
Yeah, Dan.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think there's this renewed interest, I think it comes from a lot of different things, but I think there's two big reasons, and I think the first is that there's a lot of people who have made this connection between human health and their food.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are realizing, you know, like, wow, there's a lot of kids, there's some of the statistic is about, you know, 1 in 3 kids are going to have diabetes in their lifetimes in this next generation. You know, when you talk about obesity, the statistics are pretty frightening as well. So people are making that realization, hey, that food has a huge impact, especially with the availability of all this fast food and the way our diets
right.
have changed. So I think a lot of people have made the connection there. And I think the other part of that is this new idea about, environmentalism has been around for a long time, but this idea of, like, sustainability and saying, you know, sustainability is really important. It's become something, it's a value and I think a life choice for a lot of both young and old people. You know, it's really intergenerational, at least what we saw on the road. So there's all these people who are kind of converging on all these different issues from social justice to human health to environmentalism and sustainability. Whereas before, you know, and I'm only 23 years old, but what it seemed to me is before, you know, these were kind of separate movements. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to work on health issues, or I'm going to do sustainability, or I'm going to do this. But now it's become a really comprehensive, you know, movement that's all coming together at once, which I think makes it really exciting.
Well, that's a pretty good one. Andy, what about you?
Yeah, a big reason we're hearing about all these efforts now in the media is because a lot of them are just inherently cool. I mean, we visited rooftop farms in New York City. We visited a barge in the Hudson River that was growing food on a greenhouse. We visited a project called Compass Green, which was a greenhouse built on the back of a truck run off biofuel. Like, that stuff is really cool. To see it in person is one thing, but to actually, you know, be a part of those projects, it must be very satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
We just, the amount of...
And a 23-year-old young man, cool is cool.
Yeah, and I mean, think about all the young people. I mean, and that's what's, I think, really driving this movement in a lot of places is a bunch of young people coming out of college and saying, you know, hey, like, what can I do? What can I do that has a meaningful impact on the world and really makes change?
Now, that's something that I wanted to ask you, because I have three things here that I think have made an impact. And you just touched on one. Well, you touched on two, actually. Food quality and sustainability is the first one you nailed, and you nailed it pretty good. But something you just said is that it gives people something to do. It empowers people. And if, you know, if you look at the newspaper today, what you see is a world run amok. What can we do to change it? And you're hitting on something here. We can do this to change our world and make a significant difference.
And I mean, I think it's something that's really obviously hands-on. Growing your food, it's something that anybody can do in really any situation that they're in, you know. So the people we met, you know, there's not any typical sort of urban farmer, you know, that we met. It's anybody from, you know, fighting the food system to building community to really just supplementing their food. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in terms of these, you know, the people we met, you know, for instance, in New Orleans, you know, meeting these kids who were in a food justice academy. And basically they were in the lower Ninth Ward. The place had been totally devastated by Hurricane Katrina. A lot of these kids didn't have a school to go to or had been kicked out of traditional schools. And there was a food and farming education program for them where they would learn life skills like public speaking and selling the food to local restaurants, to things like actually growing the food themselves. So it was this thing where these kids were able to use food as this tool, you know, this tool to build
cool
their community.
Tool. A cool tool.
A cool tool, you know, to build their community, you know, get, you know, educated, empower them, and really learn about, you know, what's going on in their community and, you know, make a difference.
Okay, there's one other thing that I think has a bearing on all of this, and that is food safety, which is a huge subject these days, given the amount of contaminations that we're hearing about and experiencing throughout the country. Recently, cantaloupe, but before that, there were eggs, and there were chickens, and there was ground beef, and there was turkeys, and there was spinach, and there was baby food from China, of all things. So as we grow farther and farther from the source of our food, we become more vulnerable. We have less control over what's in that food. Now, do you
Absolutely.
Think that has a bearing on why we're becoming increasingly more interested in local food, or am I just imagining things?
No, it definitely has a big bearing. Being in control of where your food comes from is at the heart of why these people are doing it. We met this woman in Seattle who fought for her right to keep goats in her backyard because she didn't want to be forced to buy factory farm milk. And so now she has like four goats in her backyard, like maybe 2 miles away from downtown Seattle.
Right.
And so that kind of production, you know, self-determination in the city is what our film's all about. And
now,
let me
ask you this. Why do you think government is becoming increasingly more intent on regulating or restricting that kind of activity?
Well, it depends on which level of government you're talking about. I guess a lot of cities right now are doing some really neat stuff in terms of urban or metropolitan agriculture, where they're really trying to get out of the way of farmers.
Absolutely. And yet you see the Food and Drug Administration conducting armed SWAT raids on Amish farmers selling milk to their neighbors.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's crazy, right? And I mean, I think that's where, to us, it comes down to, you know, why we chose urban farming. Because in a lot of ways, you know, these policies at a larger scale, you know, things like the food bill, they're really hard to affect change on. And you can do, you can make political efforts and organize and do all those things. But the thing about city politics and, you know, city farming, a lot of that is controlled at the city level. You know, whether you can sell food that you grew in your home or in your garden, if you made jam, honey, whatever, a lot of those things are regulated by the city. And there's a lot of cities, places like, you know, Portland, Oregon, San Francisco, New York is working on some stuff right now, places all across the country that are addressing...
That are trying to get out of the way.
Yeah, and saying,
I thought that was pretty eloquent there. Just get out of the way, please.
Well, so many people that we talk to, so many small-scale producers, that's really their biggest problem, is that the municipal governments are really just creating so many barriers and obstacles for these people to produce effectively.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to ask you, gentlemen, about the five most cool farms that you've seen in your travels around the country. So you have to pick five. Or maybe, how about this? Each pick three, and that will make it six. Folks, this is The Food Chain, Michael Olson. This is, we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to go on the road with Andrew Monboquet and Dan Sussman, co-producers of the movie Growing Cities. And you, of course, too. If you have any questions, you can pick up your phone and join us. We're at 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080. Jump aboard. We're on the road with the movie guys. Well, folks, a headline in the local newspaper reads, "Long road from farm to fork worsens outbreaks." In the article that follows, details the distance between the food that we buy and where it was grown, and the consequent exacerbation of the food outbreaks that we occasionally experience, this time being the contamination of cantaloupe and how that contaminated cantaloupe killed people throughout the nation and sickened many. And so, you know, we hear these stories and we read the headlines, and so we ask today, can we shorten the distance between farm and fork and get a little bit closer to our food? With us today to help us answer that question, we have Andrew Monboquet, who is and Dan Sussman, co-producers of the movie Growing Cities. So, gentlemen, it sounds like we can shorten the distance between farm and fork, and you traveled the country and you found 30 interesting farms. Let's start and hear some good stories. Dan, let's start with you. What's your favorite?
That's a really hard question, Michael. It's like one of the hardest, because they're all different in a lot of different ways. The one I mentioned earlier with the Our School at Blair Grocery was definitely a really powerful one, with the model of really empowering kids through food, you know, using that food as...
This was in New Orleans.
In New Orleans, yeah, Our School at Blair Grocery, and that was just a really amazing thing, because a lot of these kids had been in gangs. You know, we heard their stories, and, you know, they had carried guns around. They had done all these really scary things, but then they had a chance to work with food and, you know, just get their hands dirty, and you saw this change. You know, they really... were enjoying what they were doing, and
let me ask you this: do you think, as speaking as a 23-year-old, that work has become anathema to children, or has work been taken away from children and they just haven't had the experience with it anymore? I mean,
I think the hands-on sort of work is what a lot of kids just don't get these days. You know, in terms of, you know, the average child spends over 50 hours a week in front of electronics. You know, so if you think about those sorts of things, a lot of jobs these days are done online. You know, I know I spend most of my time on the computer. So I think there's a lot of things that kind of are pushing towards this disconnection from nature. And what this farming thing is doing is pushing back, you know, especially in cities where the kids aren't growing up, you know, in rural areas.
Or, connection.
You know, they don't have that sort of connection. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the really other part of this urban farming.
You know, I'm reminded of a local manager of the local fair here who was out preparing the fair for opening, and he had a bunch of the young, I guess they used to call them juvenile delinquents, but I don't know what they call them anymore, out cleaning up the fairgrounds, and he noticed that a bunch of them had gathered around the 4-H stalls, and they were just congregating there, so he thought maybe there's trouble, so he went up to check it out, and here were all these kids from the inner city, like you just described, standing around watching a young 4-H gal milk a cow. And
it was
like, oh my goodness, this is where our milk comes from. And they're making that connection for what perhaps is the first time.
Yeah, and I think it's really amazing because a lot of these kids, you know, just don't know how a tomato's grown or like that a carrot grows in the ground. And it's really scary, you know. But I think it's also this really amazing tool that we have. And, you know, that was some of the most powerful stuff we
saw. Did that touch something in you?
It did. I mean, for my whole life, I've been really engaged with kids, and that's, you know, a lot of the reason why I'm doing this project as well, is to inspire kids both in
I mean,
Nebraska,
you, where, did it touch something inside of you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was pretty shaken after hearing some of the stories of, like, that, you know, these kids had been in, you know, gangs and, like, had been, you know, that, and that was pretty normal. You know, it wasn't like that was kind of the everyday thing. And then having the opportunity to grow food and, you know, feel like they were doing meaningful work.
Touch the earth.
Yeah, it definitely resonated with me, really.
You have to be a robot for it not to.
Yep. Okay, Andy, your turn. What's your favorite?
My favorite farm would have to be the Grange Rooftop Farm in Queens.
That's New York City.
Yes. In New York City, obviously space is at a premium. People are looking where they can be producers. And this farm is 7 stories up. It's an acre rooftop farm with a great view of the skyline of New York City. It was really cool because it was the first time we had to take an elevator to a farm.
Uh-huh. And tell us about, you know, now this is radio, so fill us
in.
Give us a picture. It's an acre, that's a lot of land.
Yes.
Or a rooftop, as it were.
So to pull that off, they had to crane in over 1 million pounds of soil, which, you know, I wouldn't want to be involved in that kind of hard work right off the start.
They craned it in on top of a roof then?
Absolutely. Yeah, so you go into this huge office building, a very chic modern entranceway, and they're doing a little farm stand there in the lobby, and then you go to the elevator, you take it 7 floors up, you come out, and there it is. It's all soil with kale and greens and all kinds of veggies, you know, tomatoes, even raspberries and other fruit, chickens. They had everything up there. And it's just this huge, huge space with plenty of sunlight, probably they would say too much sunlight. But it's amazing. They had everything growing straight out of concrete. And it really just shatters the idea that farming has to be done in rural areas. It can be done anywhere you are, even on top of a roof in New York City.
Now, who's doing that?
They're their own organization. Mm-hmm. They have a CSA. Who is they?
It's
the Brooklyn Grange Rooftop Farm.
Okay, so it's just a co-op of some kind?
There was some founding partners, Ben, I forget his last name, Anastasia, who we mostly talked a lot with Anastasia and Ben, but there were a couple other of the founding partners that were around there. But, and, you know, they're mid-20s. You know, young entrepreneurs that, you know, got this farm in place, and they're doing an amazing job. They're selling to all different kinds of restaurants around town, and they're selling a farmer's market in their lobby and at other farmer's markets.
Okay.
Yeah, and none of them, the most amazing part, none of them were really farmers before they did it, and they figured it out. And I think that's what a lot of people are doing that we met, like, didn't necessarily have that farming background.
Well, that's an interesting observation, because kids you spoke of in New Orleans and the kids you're talking about, the young adults you're meeting in New York City, and yourselves. You know, you're not agricultural entrepreneurs, and yet that's exactly what you're all involved in, is agricultural entrepreneurialism. And so this is all very interesting. We're going to go on to the next farm. So far we've talked about New Orleans and New York City. Dan, where are you going to take us next after this break?
I want to take you to Green Ferry Farm in Berkeley, California.
Oh, Green Ferry Farm in Berkeley, California. We're going across the country to California to talk about Green Ferry Farms in Berkeley, California, with Andrew Monbalquette and Dan Sussman, co-producers of the upcoming movie Growing Cities. And if you have any questions you'd like to chip in with, we'd love to hear them. We're at 831-479-1080. On the road today we are with urban agriculture and local food. Do stay tuned, right back. Hey folks, welcome back. Michael Olson here. Today we're traveling the food chain of local agriculture with the co-producers of the movie Growing Cities, Andrew Monbalquette and Dan Sussman. We've been to New Orleans, we've been to New York City, and now we're all the way across the country to Berkeley, California to talk about Green Ferry Farm. Is that what I heard, Dan Sussman?
Yeah, that's correct. And I just wanted to mention, because we're obviously not going to get to all of our farms today, but you can look at our website at growingcitiesmovie.com, and look, we have a whole page about the trip, so you can look at that, you can check out videos, and even sign up for our e-newsletter to follow us virtually. But yeah, so Green Ferry Farm is actually something, it's basically like an urban homestead, so basically they have two lots in their backyard. Normal house, looks like a normal home in Berkeley, but then you go into the backyard and it has everything from rabbits to chickens, goats, which they milk, and it was at least 10 goats.
He had a lot of goats for one backyard.
Yes, it was a lot of goats. And
So how does he get along with his neighborhood?
It's a good question. As far as we could tell, he was getting along fine. He was selling his milk to his neighbors. It was a group of them, actually, kind of a co-op.
Mm-hmm.
And they would sell the milk to the neighbors. He would actually walk his goats around the neighborhood across San Pablo, which is the busiest street in Berkeley. So he literally had his three goats on a leash, and we filmed this. He's walking across the street with these big goats. They're at least 3 or 4 feet tall, full-grown goats, and walk down the sidewalk, they are eating anything that overhangs the sidewalk. So, like rose bushes, like beautiful flowers.
Oh,
anything.
Goats love roses. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's all fair game. So he said, you know, anything that hangs over, it's fair game. So that was a really, you know, just fun experience, because he was showing us all about how the milking the goats and, you know, what he does to take care of the rabbits. And he had a great garden with bees and all of that, too. So it was really this kind of representative, I think, of this bigger movement of people who are in the city, who are really pushing the boundaries of saying, mm-hmm. you know, what can we do in cities, whether it's goats. There's miniature cows now. We haven't met any miniature cows, but I don't think they're that small either. But, you know, there's all these sorts of different possibilities, even in a suburban or urban setting, you know, for your backyard or front yard.
Okay, Andrew, it's your turn. Where are you going to take us next?
Now we're going back to Texas, to East Austin.
East Austin, from Berkeley to East Austin.
Yes, it was our last stop on the tour, and it was really amazing. There were four farms down there that we covered. That were
in Austin?
Kind of, yes, mm-hmm. in East Austin. It used to be maybe 20 years ago is the wrong side of town, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Carol Ann Sayers at Boggy Creek Farm, she started a farm there, and that kind of started this East Austin food revolution. And today you go there on a Saturday, and you find these four amazingly productive farms all within the same city block. The farms Rain Lily, Boggy Creek, Springdale Farms, and House Bar Farms. And House Bar Farm was the first one we visited there. with a lady named Dorsey Barger, who also runs the Eastside Cafe in Austin. So the story is that she's got a ton of goats, chickens, even a donkey in this huge, I think it was like an acreage. Or
2 acres, I think.
2 acres, but she caught the farming bug about 2 years ago or so and bought this big plot of land so that she can supplement her restaurant with food that she herself grows. And so they produce about 80% of the eggs used in her restaurant. They produce all kinds of vegetables and herbs and greens, all kinds of good stuff. But it was amazing because this one farm, Boggy Creek, was started about 20 years ago, and now these three other farms have sprung up around them. And instead of being competitive and, you know, really...
They're kind of like when you have one car dealer, you get a few people to show up, but if you have 12 car dealers, you get the whole town to show up looking for cars, right?
Right. But in this case, it's really good. It's good organic food. But they had this amazing sense of community. They were all really good friends. And we actually got to end the tour going to a potluck with all four farms, and we just had the best time. They were incredibly hip, you know, for
cool.
Being
cool. We're talking cool today. They were cool.
But so we got to be the young guns, but we had amazing time with them. We learned so much from them. So that was a really neat experience and a great way to end the tour.
Now, before you take off, did you get a chance to visit with Will Allen in Growing Power up in Milwaukee?
Yes, sir.
Tell us about Will.
Yeah. So Will is such just a presence. You know, you go in there and you're in, you know, Growing Power.
Not only is he a presence, but he's a present.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yes. So they have just so many different things going on with, you know, the fish tanks and the aquaponics. They have mushrooms.
Compost.
It's over, what is it? It's tons and tons of compost that they're producing.
I mean, they have several different sites in Milwaukee, and one of them is a couple acres devoted just to compost production.
So Will was, you know, really generous in terms of, you know, doing an interview, and then he showed us, you know, with his big hands, showing us the compost and the worms and digging through the compost, and it was just really amazing.
Will used to be a professional athlete, right?
Yeah, he played professional basketball in Europe for a number of seasons.
Right. And it became the professional farmer of Growing Power in Milwaukee. You know, when we're going to get back from our last break here, I got to ask you the big question. And it's a sustainability question. And the question is, can we take these cool local farms and go up and compete against the industrial model that is currently the dominant paradigm? Right back. Do stay tuned. Well, folks, they say this about sustainability. It's a stool with three legs. One leg is that it has to be sustainable. It has to be environmentally friendly. The other leg, of course, is that it has to be just. And of course, the third leg is it has to generate profit. Now, when I did what these young men are doing, and when I was putting together my book Metro Farm, I went looking for farms that were profitable. I thought, if you could be profitable, you could do the rest of it. You can take care of this environmental stuff, and you could take care of the social justice, and everything will work itself out. But it has to be profitable. So I'd like to ask the young men with us today, Andrew Monboquet and Dan Sussman, the co-producers of the movie Growing Cities, did you find economic viability in the farms that you looked at? They were cool, they were fun, they were interesting, but can they stand up to the competition of a marketplace that is dominated by industrial models? Dan?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's another question we were definitely looking at as we went throughout the trip. And I think the demand is there. So that's the bottom line in terms of can it compete with this industrial stuff, is there is a demand for fresh, local, healthy food. So that's the really good news.
Can local agriculture supply that demand on a cost-effective basis?
You know, I think the answer is yes. Maybe not right this second.
Did you find anybody that was doing it?
We did. There's a number of examples of people and organizations that were that we visited that are doing that. One example of a brand new business is this place called Gotham Greens in New York City, where they have a hydroponic rooftop farm. Again, a rooftop farm in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. Where they have these very high houses, all this stuff.
Climate controlled.
And they're growing salad. That's all they're growing is salad greens, kale, all these sorts of things. And basically they're making these gourmet salads, and they're selling to places like Whole Foods, all the sort of higher end grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
And they're
actually making money at it.
Yeah, they're making money. The point of their thing is to make money. That's mm-hmm. the bottom line. It's a business. And from what we could tell, they're doing pretty well. It looks good. It's they have the investors, and I think they're going to be making a lot of money. And it's not just places like that, but there's a place in Philadelphia again. I think almost all across the country met people who are trying this. And I think the question is a little bit different if you're saying, is local agriculture sustainable economically? Because I think that is a lot better track record. But then if we talk about urban farmers in particular, whether they can do it financially sustainable, it's a whole different question, because things like land in the city is very expensive.
Right, right, right.
Water, mm-hmm. all that stuff. So it's a lot harder to do it within the city.
I guess that's why I called my work Metro Farm after metropolitan agriculture rather than urban agriculture, simply because most of the successful economic models I've seen were just in or near the city and for the city. And yet, local agriculture, you think, really does have a future. You're seeing it, right?
Absolutely.
How do we get in touch with you, gentlemen? We're almost out of time here.
Well, yeah, a great example of how productive.
Tell us your website so we can get in touch with you.
Oh, you can get in touch with us at growingcitiesmovie.com. We have videos up there.
There it
is.
Thank you very much, very much. Andrew Mumbo, Dan Sussman, thank you for joining us on The Food Chain. And thank you all for tuning in out there.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.